when you're saving in the right way, you have an intention with what you're saving for.
It's for a purpose.
It's for a purpose. When you're hoarding, you're just trying to keep all the money. You're just trying to keep all the money. And it's rooted not in like the mindset of financial freedom or trying to build something with your money. It's rooted in fear. You're fearful of, yeah, that scarcity mindset. You're fearful that, you know, if I spend this money, it might not come back to me. And so I'm just going to keep as much of my money as possible.
Have you ever wondered whether there's actually a sustainable way to balance a healthy and meaningful life with your busy schedule? Well, you're in luck, Balancer, because I did too. And the Balance Theory podcast is now a dedicated space to be curious in finding a balance that just works. Because since we're being honest here, balance isn't a one size fits all. I'm your host, Erica, and let's dive into today's episode.
All right, balancers, today's guest is here to talk with me about a subject I've only actually had a handful of guests on in the last 3 years on to talk about, but something and a conversation I think can be quite polarizing depending on where people stand on the matter. But I think knowledge is power. And when we talk about money, it can be quite empowering and liberating just to unpack a lot of the ways we maybe are currently doing things, ways we can do things better, and ways we can ultimately live the life we want to live. So today's guest is a recent graduate of the London School of Economics, which he was awarded as one of the UK's top 10 black students by Rare Recruitment and UK Corporate Finance Women of the Year by Ernst & Young. She's currently a banker at the world's biggest investment bank and began her YouTube channel to help others start their careers at top firms. After purchasing her investment property 6 months after graduating, she gradually transitioned her channel to cover more finance and wealth-related topics such as side hustling, investing, entrepreneurship, and general lifestyle content. All things I'm really excited to learn about and get to know about her. And our guest today is Lamide Elizabeth. Lamide, a warm welcome to the Balance Theory.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
No, it's a pleasure. So just, I guess, to kick things off, so you studied economics, you kind of worked in the banking space. What made you pivot and want to start a channel to help other people? And I only ask this because I think there are a lot of people that enjoy what they do, but to stretch that then to, I guess, create content for other people is like a whole nother ballpark. I mean, I know how much work is involved as well. So what made you want to do that?
So what made me want to get started? Well, so I always used to watch YouTube growing up. But at the time when I was watching YouTube, it was a lot of like family vloggers or like beauty vloggers. But I always knew I wanted to do YouTube, but I didn't really see anyone doing like in the field of like finance and money. It wasn't really about that. Like YouTube started off very much like fashion, games, beauty, family.
More like a vloggy.
Yeah. Like very, very vlog focused. But it was always in the back of my mind. And I think with me coming from the background that I did, going to the places that I went to was actually quite unconventional. And so a lot of people who were from similar backgrounds from me had a lot of questions on how did you get into the London School of Economics and how did you get started in investment banking? Because these things are quite, quite elitist as well. So it wasn't very usual for people from my background.
Can you just qualify what you mean when you say your background? Just so listeners know.
Okay. So I grew up in London. I grew up in Hackney, which is like not the best, wasn't the best neighborhood to grow up in London. It was known for being quite rough. It's being gentrified now, but it was known for being quite rough. I also went to like a state school, not a very good school. And I'm like from a single parent household. So the statistics on what you are supposed to become coming from that kind of background, like where I am right now, like defies the odds of where I'm expected to be.
Sure.
So yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Okay, cool. And so growing up, was there anything in your upbringing that encouraged you to go into what you're studying now? I.e., did you have that kind of education from the single parent that raised you through other influences in your life? Or was this something completely, I know you already kind of prefaced it was an unconventional career, but was it something you were just interested in, something you were encouraged to study? Like what kind of led you to actually jump into it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I feel like even by virtue of being like from the background that I was from, but living in London, you're kind of exposed to that dichotomy of like wealth and poverty, because like you may be living in poverty, but you're in one of like the richest cities in the world. And like you have all of these big buildings and these fancy buildings. So it was kind of like, okay, this is my situation, but like I can see that there is wealth around me. So that was always like attractive to me. And then also, I guess I kind of wanted to understand like why am I where I am? Like, what are the circumstances that have led me to be where I am? And then how do I get to the next level? And how are these people in the situations that they are in? I was always kind of interested in like that difference between wealth and poverty. And so my degree is actually like, I studied economic history. So it's not actually... it's not history, it's not economics. You are actually studying the wealth and poverty of nations. So you're literally understanding, why are some countries rich? How did they develop the way that they have developed? And why are some countries lagging behind? So I've always had that interest. And for me, banking was like, it was like your one-way ticket, like out of the situation that I was in, because this is like it's one of the highest paid industries in London, right? So I was like, well, if I want to get paid and I want to change my circumstances, then banking is the way to go. My mom is a nurse, so she has, even till this day, obviously she knows what a bank is, but I think she thinks I work in like a, you know, like your local bank where you just go out. Yeah, yeah. I think that's what she thinks it is. She has no clue like what investment banking is. But kind of through education and kind of being like, I was that student that the teachers did really believe in, like when it got to a certain point. So they would push me in the right direction, but I was also super hungry. So I would be researching, okay, what programs can I access? What things can I do? And then I eventually like was getting myself into spaces where people who didn't come from the same backgrounds as me, we were doing the same program. So I was getting opened up to those sort of opportunities. And then because I wanted to go into banking and because of my interest in just general, like understanding my poverty and then understanding like the wealth that is out there, I think it kind of led me towards like wanting to go into banking or wanting to go into something money related.
Super interesting. If you had to give your 18-year-old self advice, right, that's roughly around the year we all finished school now, in terms of money, right, and what you understand about wealth creation, what bit of advice would you give that you think would have made the world of difference? Because I can guarantee there'll be a lot of people listening. I mean, I've actually got, I'm a corporate lawyer now, but I have a background in banking, finance, law. And I can't honestly say I know exactly what an investment banker does specifically, right? I couldn't describe you the job role. So I'm curious to know, with your experience now, where you are after doing your channel for so much time, what advice would you give to your younger self or anyone listening who maybe their money education or finance education isn't up to scratch, or it's not something they've really opened up? What would you say to them?
You know, what's interesting, at the age of 18, that was when I like started getting really clued up about money. So at that point, that was the first time I picked up Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So I actually took a gap year and I worked in an insurance company. And I was like, at this point, I was saving heavy because all of my friends had gone to university. So I had no one really around me. And I started making my first big girl money. Like it was like £1,000 a month or something like that. And I was like, okay, I have seen like people around me, like in my family, make a lot of money mistakes. I'm earning my first big girl paycheck, so I don't want to make these mistakes. So I picked up Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I started reading then. And I feel like I don't think there's anything necessarily different that I would tell that girl, because she was doing the right things. Like I think I got switched on at the right time when it comes to money. So if there's anyone watching this who is at that age and you're thinking, oh, money is something that, you know, I will deal with like when I get my first job outside of uni or when I start making six figures or something like that, your money journey starts really, really early. Like the habits that you pick up, the mindset that you have with money, that's something I always say, like, it's like a muscle that you flex. Like people always ask me, oh, like, how are you so good at saving? How are you able to save so much? It started really early. It was a habit that I started when I had a little bit of money. And as I've made more money, my muscle with saving has only gotten bigger and better. So yeah, that's kind of what I would say. It's kind of an answer, kind of not really. Really an answer, but yeah.
No, I get that. I guess like you had a genuine passion for it, so it was something that was organic for you. I want to talk about two things: mistakes and mindset. So let's go with the mistakes first. I know one of the things you talk about are things that many of us do that keep us broke, or that keep us from, I guess, reaching our financial potential. And I think this is interesting to understand, because I'm sure there'll be things that we maybe don't think about as being mistakes, or things that we could easily, you know, turn our attention to. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the common things that many of us are doing that are keeping us broke.
Oh, this is such an interesting one. I have like so many things that I could say, but the one that comes to my mind right now, I feel like a lot of us let our like previous maybe traumas kind of dictate our money decisions. And the reason that I say this is sometimes we do things not because like we are trying to impress other people, but because we are trying to impress the person that we were when we were younger. So for example, when I first started making money, I bought a lot of designer things. Like I started in investment banking, like you get paid really, really well. And I was buying all of these designer things. And it wasn't necessarily because I was trying to like flex on other people. It was just because I remember when I was younger and I would go into like certain designer shops. And you know, when you look at the label and you're just like, okay, I'm just going to put that back down. And I remember thinking like one day I'm going to be able to walk into the store and I'm going to be able to buy anything that I want. And I always wanted to have that feeling of I'm in this store, I can buy whatever I want. And I think that when I started getting money, I was having that habit of like, okay, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy that. And that was because I was still trying to prove a point to that younger version of me that you can buy anything that you want. And I think a lot of people have that, but they don't grow out of it. And so you're still trying to prove a point to your younger self, or you're still trying to prove a point to maybe people that you grew up with that you have money. And, you know, we talk about lifestyle inflation, where you are trying to, instead of like having that wealth and like keeping that wealth to yourself, you want to put it on display so that other people know. Because maybe, especially from people from my background, right, where you have grown up without much, there's a tendency to really want to prove to people that you have something, even you,
like you've made it.
Yeah, like you've made it. And even above the level that you are actually at. And it's like in London, especially, like luxury cars is like the norm. Like people will drive luxury cars on like salaries that aren't very high, because it's like, well, I've got to prove to people that I've got a job. I've got to prove to people that I have something. So this is the car I'm going to drive. And so I think just one that like trying to prove a point to yourself and not really dealing with some of the money traumas you might have from growing up is one thing. I even remember I was watching a vlog like of someone, and she was saying that when she was younger, her mum always used to make them ration toilet paper. And so now that she's older, she always buys like an abundance of toilet paper, because she just remembers that trauma of like, you know, like don't be so like frivolous with the toilet paper, we don't have much, you know. And then that kind of trauma kind of stays with you, and now you go overboard because of like
to compensate,
yeah, to compensate for it, right? So I think there's that, and also like I think lifestyle inflation is like a big killer of the path to wealth, because if you don't increase that gap between how much you're earning and how much you're saving, you're never really going to change your situation. And even working in banking, right, you would think that, I thought going into banking that, oh, these people here, like they are making the money. And then during my internship, I'm literally like, so we're doing like, they always do these like socials, you know, these socials that you do in corporate, right? And to like convince the interns to come back or whatever. But towards the end of the night, they kind of forget that you're there and they're just drinking. And then, you know, the truth starts coming out and they're having this conversation about money. And I'm like, these are like the VPs, the executive directors, and they're still complaining about money. They're still saying that they don't have enough money and they're not getting paid enough and they don't have enough money to send this person to school and all of these things. And I'm like, wow, like you are earning so much more than everyone that I've grown up with, and you're still having the same complaints about money. And that's lifestyle inflation. Like you've increased, you earn significantly more than the average population in the UK, which earn like 30K. These people are earning like 200K a year, and this is in pound, 200K a year, 250K a year plus, right? Not even including bonuses. And you're still complaining about money, and that's lifestyle inflation like in full effect. So yeah, that's definitely another thing that I would say.
So just to dig into that a little bit deeper, lifestyle inflation, because I think this is really interesting. So correct me if I'm wrong, it's the idea of you earn more and then you kind of increase your lifestyle because you've got more money, right?
Yes.
And so you're never actually earning more money because everything's just relatively going up together, right? So how do you, because it's quite tempting, right?
Yeah.
To, you've now got access to these things that maybe you couldn't afford before. Mm. Do you have any tips for how to actually manage that jump? Because there's a lot of people who regularly get pay rises. Even I am thinking myself, like, you know, if I get a pay rise and maybe we'll move into a different place. So you do have the tendency to think that. But what things help combat that? Is it having a clear direction on what else that money is used for, where you're going in the future? Like, how do you kind of plan it? Because when I talk about balance on the podcast, right, it's, I think a lot of people limit that to work-life balance, right? That simple conversation. But I think we can't ignore the role money plays in the lifestyle we want to live. And so I think it's important for people to think about their relationship to money, and then B, how they create a little bit of a system or a plan around it.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of approach, you know, I'm sure you have goals for yourself. Do you have a buffer for that so that you don't fall into that lifestyle inflation?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because there are some elements of lifestyle inflation that are natural, right? Like if you, me moving to Dubai, my lifestyle, like the my expenses for my lifestyle went up significantly because in London I was living at home. So now I'm having to pay rent and like, that's a natural lifestyle inflation, and it's a big difference. I think for me, the way I like to think about it is value-based spending, right? It's okay to spend money on things, like you're talking about balance, it's okay to spend money on things that you really value. But I think you really have to start asking yourself, okay, why am I spending money on this thing, right?
Like, so, what's the intention?
Yeah, like what's the intention behind me spending money? Do I really need to upgrade my phone from an iPhone 13 to an iPhone 15? What is the difference that this is making? But also, like you said as well, having a money goal and a money plan, because at the end of the day, if someone says, you know what, I don't care about saving, I really don't care about saving, I'm just earning money to spend it and to live my life, then you can give into lifestyle inflation. That's your own prerogative, right? If you don't want to save. But if you genuinely have like money goals for your life, and if you don't want to be a slave to your money forever, you want to start saving, because you want to start allowing your money to work for you. And your money can't work for you if all of your money is going towards expenses. Like that's what money is for. Like, yes, we are all here, I'm sure, like your audience, we're all at the stage where we're still working for our money, but how long do you really want to do that for? Like, at one point do you say, okay, I've worked a lot for my money, I now want my money to start working for me. And I've worked with, I'm seeing now like a lot of people who are like at the retirement age, let's say my parents' age, my friend's parents' age. And there are some people who was like, okay, I want to retire, but I have nothing to retire on because I've spent all of my money. So now my money can't work for me. So I think if you think to yourself, you know what, there's a time in my life where I want to start building wealth. If you want to build wealth, your money has to work for you.
Yeah.
And if your money has to work for you, then you need to be saving that money so you can invest that money. So it's kind of up to you to like at what rate you want to save. But the more you can increase the gap between how much you're making and how much you're saving, then the quicker you can accelerate your path to wealth. So there are like kind of rules that I like to follow. Like, let's say in terms of this, I don't know if you've heard of the 50-30-20 rule.
No, please share it.
Which is like 50% of your income should go towards your needs. So let's say like your rent, your bills, that kind of thing. And then
the
bare necessities, right? Transportation, all of those things. Then 30% towards your wants. So if you want to go out with your friends, if you want to dine out, buy clothes or whatever, and then 20% towards your savings. Like that's I think that's like a good pie. That's like, you know what, I'm covering my needs, I'm spending some money on the things that I want, but then I'm also having this pot of money that's going towards like building my wealth, whether that's paying down debt or investing your money.
And I think that's a good way to break it down, because one thing I've always been interested in, I feel like in the past, I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with this, is we go into like this kind of all or nothing mentality where you're like, all right, if I'm saving and this is my goal, I can't spend a single thing, right? And that puts you in a very restrictive, suffocated kind of energy.
Yeah. Right?
And I feel like it just does not work long term.
Oh,
you can
my
only
God.
Do that for so long.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you about the balance between like saving and spending, because I think you do have to enjoy your money. I'm very much of the view where, you know, there's no point sitting on money and just waiting for the future and the future and, you know, never enjoying the present moment, because it's really all we've got. We don't have yesterday, we don't have tomorrow. But there has to be a grain of salt with that statement, because you do have to plan for where you want to go in the future. So I think what you've just said, that breakdown, the 50-30-20, is a great way that makes it tangible to be like, okay, well, I can enjoy X amount of my salary, and that still gives you the freedom to do things, even if you have to taper back, but it's not like that complete shut off.
Yeah.
And I think this conversation is interesting just for people to reflect on what their goals are and then what their habits are, because I can guarantee, I know for sure, if it's not now, definitely in the recent recent past, there's been moments where my money habits do not align with my goals, right? And that's very important because, as you said, like, you need to create the lifestyle that you want. Is this kind of what you talk about when you, I know you speak about saving pots. Mm-hmm. So is that within that 20% bracket now? Like, what do we actually, how do we save, like, how do we make the most of that saving? Is it through using the saving pots that you kind of talk about?
I think with the saving pots, I guess is I one of the things that I've noticed with creating my content is sometimes people can find it hard to save if they don't know what they're saving for. So there's a, like, for example, there's something called a sinking fund, right? And this is where you save like towards a holiday. But then at the end of the day, that's not like saving to build your wealth. That's saving to go on holiday, which is great. Go on holiday, enjoy your money. But at the end of the day, that's not money that's going to come back to you. You know, that's not an asset that you're building. So I think it's just about understanding the different things that you're saving for. So you can have a sinking fund, which is good. You save money over time to like do something, but then there's also saving for like the future. So like one of the saving pots I recently was talking about was just like having an I quit fund, like having a saving pot that has an intention behind it, I think will really help people to save. So I was talking in my latest YouTube video about like just having an I quit fund, because there are a lot of people who are stuck in situations. So this is like talking about this balance, right? And because I talk a lot about investing, I talk a lot about buying property. Let's just say I believe in like financial freedom and money buying you freedom, right? And I was just giving the example that like if you really hate the job that you are in, but you have like a savings pot of like £30,000 to buy a house, I personally, if that was my situation, I would rather see that 30k as like an I quit fund, where I would rather quit my job and maybe take 5k of that money to like think, okay, this is going to be my emergency fund whilst I'm figuring out what my next job would be, than take that 30k, buy a house, and now have to stay in that job that I hate because I have a mortgage to pay off, and now I'm like miserable, but okay, but I've got a house, but I'm miserable. Like, that's not the way I, you know, want to allocate my money. So an I quit fund is something that's like, you know what, okay, I do want to invest, I do want to do all of these things, but right now I'm in a situation that I hate because of money. So why not save this I quit fund so that, you know what, the next time someone pisses me off at work, I'm going to be done. Like, you know what, I'm out, and I've got 3 months worth of savings that can last me till I can find the job that I do want to do, or till I can start my business or whatever. So the where I'm going with the saving pots kind of thing is just like, what are different things that you can save for that might actually motivate you to save a bit more than just saying, oh, I'm saving, and you don't even know what you're saving for.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call out. It's a similar conversation to what I talk about in the context of boundaries, right? Like if you have a boundary and you're like, I need to get better at saying no, I want to say no more, but you don't know what you're saying no for. Like you're not clear on those priorities, then it's going to be very hard to set and stick to those kind of boundaries. So it's the same thing with saving. If it's just sitting there, there's no intention behind it, it's very difficult to know, like, to not spend it, right? And to commit to that. So what about if people were saving for things on a like as they go basis? For example, right, working towards a house, this is now where all the savings are going. Once a house is up and running, then they can kind of move on to the next thing. Is that like, I'm just curious on your thoughts on different ways to guide people on saving. Is it better to focus on one thing, or is it okay to have a few things? Like you said, there's a sinking fund for things like holidays, and then that you have, I guess, more stable things that are investments long term.
I guess it honestly really depends on your priorities and what kind of person you are and what kind of balance you like to strike, because I am someone where when I was saving for my house, I was like, I'm all in, like this is my focus for right now, and I can, you know, I can accept that I'm gonna have to let go of certain things for a whole year or however long it is till I reach this certain milestone, and once I reach that milestone, then I'm gonna do XYZ. So when I save for my house, like I was saying, like this is at the point where I just started my new job in banking, and I was like, oh, I can afford to buy all of these things. But I had that, my thing was, okay, cool. The moment that you sign the contract for this house and like you sent over the money, whatever is left over, you can use that to buy whatever luxury handbag that you want to buy, but prioritize the house first, just so like you have that goal, you're focused on it, you get it done. And then after, treat yourself to something nice. So that's kind of how I do it. But honestly, I really do think it just depends on the person and how badly you want the thing that you're going after, and whether like timing is integral or not.
Yeah. And it's like, is it an aligned thing that you want to? Because I think sometimes you know, I mean, I'm for property as well. I've got one back at home, and that's something I want to keep investing in. But I think sometimes as well, you just do things because you think that's like what you should be doing.
Ooh,
and it's like,
yeah.
Do you want to buy a house? Do you want to be tied down with a mortgage? Do you want to be, you know, I know a lot of expats here that just are happy to travel and rent in every city in the world. You know, buying a house for them may not be the investment of choice.
Oh right.
So
God,
I think
yeah.
it's interesting to also open yourself up. And I love what you're saying because it helps people reflect on, well, who am I? What do I want? What's aligned? Does this make sense for me? Can I go all in on this thing? And I think if you can't, then maybe that's a bit of an indication of like, how badly do you want it?
Yeah. And you know what? That's such a good point. Because one thing I always say is that like, your goals have to be for you, because if you go and try and achieve something that like isn't related to what you want to do, like you might even achieve the goal, but you're going to be like, okay, what was that for? And it might not work for you, especially with buying property, right? I am like, for me, I am so for it, but there are some people where it just doesn't make sense for your situation. Like if you, for example, like as someone who like in the UK as well, like home ownership is such a big thing,
It's the same in Australia.
But there are other like countries in the world where like no one really owns a home. Like that's not even a, like people are like, why would you even do that? And that's okay. Like you have to invest in what works for you. And I think a lot of people tend to adopt other people's goals. Mm. Like, oh, okay, well she bought a house, so I guess I should buy a house too. No, that's a lot of money you got to put down. And if it's not like-
Big commitment.
A really, really big commitment. And let's say for example, someone bought like a residential property, right? So in the UK, you have to either buy an investment property or you buy a residential property. And like, it's very hard to intertwine the two. So like, for example, I have a house in South Africa, but I can go and live there with ease. And then also I can have someone live in there and do an Airbnb with ease. But in the UK, you have to like pick which one of the two it is. And I have some people that I know, like, let's say, for example, and their goal is, oh, I want to move to this country and I want to move to that country. But then you're like, okay, but then because everyone's buying a house, I'm also going to buy a house as well to live in. But it's like, okay, but with the goals that you said that you want to achieve, where you want to move around the world or you want to do this and do that, if you buy that house, you're locked in. That's a big commitment. Like that really reduces your flexibility. Mm. So it's like, okay, like, when you are setting those goals, just make sure that it is your goal and you understand why you are doing it for yourself. Ask yourself like why three times. Like, okay, I want to buy a property. Why do you want to buy a property? I think it's a good investment. Why do you think it's a good investment? X, Y, Z. Okay, but why is it a good investment for you? Why is it a good investment for me? And have I thought of all the other things that come into play when I'm buying this thing? But yeah, honestly, I can go on about this forever because I just think it's so important, especially with investing, because you're putting a lot of money down like for certain investments, and get it right and do it for yourself.
Yeah, I think this is really important conversation. Most of the people listening will be in their 20s and 30s. I'm 28. I'm getting married this year. There are a lot of my friends that are kind of at that same stage, right? And I saw in the last few years, especially like post-COVID, from Australia, right, it's a big thing to do Europe trips because when it's summer in Europe, it's winter in Australia, it's a perfect getaway. Because it's so far, we go for like a couple of weeks. It's just a generally like it's a thing. You do a big Euro trip. And so we're at this age now where people want to redo their Europe trips because it's post-COVID. It's before everyone's having kids. People also want to buy properties. People are also getting married, which is a huge expense. The wedding industry in Australia, I don't know about the UK and I don't know about it here, but it is a rort. Like it's so expensive.
Really?
So there's all these competing things and I almost feel like there's this energy of like everyone just trying to do all the things because that's what everyone else is doing. And it's kind of like just bring it back into yourself, you know, like if you want to live this nomadic lifestyle and you don't want the pressure of paying off a mortgage, just rent where you want to live, you know, and when you decide you want to buy a house, you can do that later down the track. But I think this also centers around the idea of balance, right? I think you can feel really on edge and stressed out because money is a source of great stress, like for a lot of people, right? And I think if you're in that position where it doesn't align with what you actually want, that's just creating so much unnecessary stress in your life, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest takeaway for anyone listening is just think about where is your money going? And is that where you actually want it to go? And don't be afraid if you're that person that doesn't buy a house until you're 50. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Do what you want to do. Spend it the way you want to spend it. It's your life. You don't get do-overs as far as we know anyway. You know, just enjoy it the way you want. Mm-hmm. Before I go and switch over to the mindset conversation, one more question I had is, what is the difference between saving and hoarding?
Oh, this is this is a good one. I think it's particularly important when it comes to women because sometimes we are very scared to like spend money and invest, and we tend to hoard our money because it gives us some sort of, maybe some sort of comfort or some sort of,
it's like safety.
Yeah, or some sort of safety net. And so we start hoarding money. Like I speak to so many women and they're like, oh, I have like £50,000, £70,000, and I don't know where to spend it, and I don't know this, and it's like, you do know, you're just scared. Like, it's fear. Fear is holding you back. I think hoarding is like saving, like I was saying with the funds, right? Like when you're saving in the right way, you have an intention with what you're saving for.
It's for a purpose.
It's for a purpose. When you're hoarding, you're just trying to keep all the money. You're just trying to keep all the money. And it's rooted not in like the mindset of financial freedom or trying to build something with your money. It's rooted in fear. You're fearful of, yeah, that scarcity mindset. You're fearful that, you know, if I spend this money, it might not come back to me, and so I'm just going to keep as much of my money as possible. And I think what people don't realize is when you hoard money, you're actually losing. Like I always tell people, if you just keep your money in like an account and you're just saving your money there, you're actually losing money because inflation is going up. That the amount that like $100 could buy you a year ago is not what $100 can buy you today, because the cost of things is rising. And so hoarding your money is actually harming you. And so I think that's the main difference. Like hoarding has no intention. It's rooted in fear.
I think this was the biggest breakthrough for me, and it wasn't how I was raised. It was actually, my fiance is kind of a little bit more open. He was the one that taught me about investing, and making the concept of making your money work for you was like mind blowing for me. And you know, I mean, I'm not hard on myself for it, because it's not anything we learn in school. You learn to kind of get a salary, maybe pay off a house, but beyond that, you really have to be passionate and learn about it on your own accord.
Yeah.
So for people who are also new to the concept of making their money work for them in a very simple way, like what would you say that looks like? In practical terms, like options to actually make your money work for you in a very simple way.
Yeah, okay. So I'd probably wrap it up in the idea of like assets versus liabilities. In the concept of assets versus liabilities. So an asset is something that generates money for you or that can be used to generate money for you like later down the line. And a liability is something that takes money out of your pocket. And so having your money work for you is investing and putting your money into assets that in the future will generate returns for you. So it's not just like buying a property, etc. It could even be like, you know, setting money aside to start a business and letting that business grow and letting that business bring you in passive income. And so when you're sleeping, your money is still working for you because you have that passive income coming in. So yeah, so I think the idea of having your money work for you is just placing your money in strategic places such that you have returns coming back to you in the future, rather than just putting it into liabilities, which inevitably take money out of your pocket. And it's kind of understanding that difference. And even like as we were talking about like property and stuff, there's also a difference there because and I know this is going to be a bit polarizing and people are going to have really strong opinions about this, but buying a house to live in is not always an, let me not say it's not always an asset, but for most people, it's going to be more of a liability, at least at first, because once you buy that house, like, okay, let me put it this way. The house in itself is an asset, but because most people have a mortgage, that is going to lead to a lot of cash outflow. So at your outset, you have a lot of money just going out. You're now paying for your mortgage. You now have to furnish your house. You now have to pay for the heating and the electricity and this and that and that.
All the taxes that come with
it. So actually at the start, it's a liability. Yes, it can be an asset in the fact that, okay, yes, property can increase in value and then you can sell it and then get the money back and whatever, you can remortgage. But I think you really have to really understand the difference between what an asset is and what a liability is to know how you can make your money work for you.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I was going to ask you the question, at what point do you draw the line and say a property investment's actually a liability over an asset? And I think distinguishing it between it being residential and investment is a key one. And then also just thinking about it long term, right? I think there's a lot of factors as well, like where's the market at, interest rates, etc. But I think it's a really interesting concept. Have you dabbled in any investments beyond property at all?
So this year I did my first investment into a business. So like my friend's business. That was just because she was fundraising and I was like, I actually really believe in her brand and I really like what she was doing. And so I put a little bit of money into that. And that's mainly it. I did like really small crypto investment. And also like I was investing in the stock market. And then when I joined investment banking, like I had to close out all my positions because we had like access to private side information. And so, you know, you can do insider trading and stuff. And then they only want you to invest in a very particular way. And I didn't enjoy that, but I'm going to be leaving banking soon. So now I'm going to like go back into investing in the stock market. Yeah, in the way that I like doing. But another thing when it comes to money, right? I don't just invest in property because it's what you should be doing with your money. I actually enjoy it. So that is my main strategy for investing right now because I actually enjoy it. So like the property that I bought in South Africa, I'm actually planning to move back into that property like later on this year and just live there for a bit. So it's something that I'm doing not just for like the financial side of thing. It's also like a lifestyle thing as well. Like I genuinely enjoy it. So it's my main investment, but also like investing into business, investing into the stock market. And I'd prefer to like dig deep with something and get good at it and then diversify than like have like a portfolio of like 100 million different things and not really have any expertise or like real foot with one particular thing.
Yeah, I think that's important because it can be overwhelming. I've had a lot of conversations with my cousins, with friends, with listeners who, you know, they're earning a good salary, they have a little bit left over, they want to invest it, but they don't even know where to start. And then I think just thinking through all the different options is super overwhelming and you just end up procrastinating and doing nothing. So I think finding one thing and starting with that question of what's actually aligned for me. So just like you said with the lifestyle thing, I've thought the same thing. I was like, big, you know, got a property in Sydney, love to get one here in Dubai and then potentially one in Europe because that will facilitate the kind of lifestyle I want to live every single year.
That's but for someone else,
yeah, for someone else listening who maybe just lives in their hometown and they want to work there and stay there, like, well, how can you make your money work for you in other ways? How can you make that lifestyle in that town better by maybe having passive income so that you can have a more abundant lifestyle, you know, at that place? So I think that's a really interesting point to start with, and then you can find the investment vehicle that makes the most sense. Before we go, I do want to ask you about the mindset shift, right? So for people listening who maybe are in that scarcity mindset, it might be because of experiences they've had growing up, like your friend with the toilet paper situation, or maybe they didn't come from money or they just don't have the education. I mean, I definitely feel like I had a scarcity mindset growing up. My parents, they got divorced. We didn't have, you know, we definitely were not uncomfortable, but we didn't really eat out a lot. You know, it was a little, we had secondhand clothes, stuff like that, you know, so I didn't come from an upbringing where I felt necessarily abundant and I didn't have this drive and motivation to go out and get heaps of money. You know, I didn't think that was necessary and I just didn't think it was a reality for me. So for people who also have a scarcity mindset, what tips do you have for shifting into an abundant mindset? Because I think the mindset, yes, it's not everything. I think education plays a role too, but I do think it plays a big part.
The first step will be like understanding like where your scarcity mindset comes from and then how it affects you and where does it show up? Because it's really hard to try and defeat and tackle something that you don't understand, right? Because there are certain things that I would do that I didn't understand that this was from a scarcity mindset. So let's say, for example, I was like a super independent person. Like I would like buy something from IKEA, a whole huge wardrobe, and I would try to do that by myself. And that was because like growing up without much, it was like, we can't pay someone to do that. Like you better learn how to do it because no one else is going to come and help you. Whereas at one point I was like, why am I trying to do this by myself? I can literally just pay someone on TaskRabbit or whatever app it is, like a couple pounds, and they will literally do it for me. But that was the scarcity mindset coming in. It was like, if you can do something by yourself, then you should do it by yourself because you can do it. But it's like, no, like this is my scarcity mindset coming in into areas of my life that I wouldn't even think. So I think the first step is trying to just kind of look at like some of the habits that you have and like the things that you do and try to understand, okay, where is this behavior coming from? Because then you can start to really tackle it. And then I think, I mean, for me, I read a lot. I try to read a lot and just to tap into the mindset of people who are where I want to be, who do have an abundant mindset, and try and understand, okay, what is it? Why is it that they think the way they think? So one of the things that I really, really love that a lot of people who have, that I see have an abundant mindset have, is they think of money as like, they don't take it too seriously. They see it as like a game, like making like money.
Energy
well. Like it's like energy. They see money as like a game that, oh, like this is just something that like I'm going to play and I'm going to try and play to win. And that kind of mindset, it takes away from the seriousness of it. Even though, of course, money is a very serious thing, but it's just that mindset switch to just not to not be something that you're so fearful of, to be something that you're like, oh, it's kind of like a game. Like I'm just going to try and get as good as this game as possible. But reading and like engaging with other people who I have seen have an abundant mindset has really helped me to do that, because I can understand now like their thinking behind money and why they think the way that they think. And that can sometimes challenge me a lot. So for example, like one of my mentors, she is like, oh, like once you reach a certain level of wealth, you realize that leverage is a good thing. But when you grow up with a scarcity mindset, debt is never a good thing. Having to borrow money is never like, what do you mean? That can't be a good thing. But then just understanding her when she's talking about leverage from a business perspective and not having debt in your personal name, but having debt in your business name. But I wouldn't get that if I wasn't listening and understanding people who have an abundance mindset. So I would say start there. And then also with understanding like where your scarcity mindset comes from and how it manifests, and then trying to tackle it that way. I'm by no means an expert in it, but like you said, you had a scarcity mindset as well. Were there any things that you did?
I think one interesting thing was noticing where it was easy for me to spend money and where it wasn't. Because I think you can have a scarcity mindset, but it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't show up in every area. So like spending money on holidays or out for dinner wasn't really an issue for me. But when it came to like, I don't know, big things like with the property, stuff like that, it kind of pained me a lot more. So I think just noticing where your ease with money comes from. Like I think they're sometimes called your money dials, right? Like where you can dial in your happiness and your joy into spending versus where you can't. Noticing that, I think, is definitely step one. And step two, I'll have to back one of the things you said, which is learning from other people, which is actually why I've got you on the podcast today, because you know, learning from you and like listening to YouTubers is something I've made a priority this year, because I actually sat down to write my goals. And what I noticed, because in a goal setting system that I've put together, one of the steps in there is to write my goals out and then look at them and notice if I have any limitations or any just like doubt kind of feelings towards any of those goals. And what I realized was a strong limiting belief when it came to money. So that scarcity element's still there. You know, it's my ability to make it in my side passions in what I'm doing. And so not an antidote, but a step one for me was the awareness. Step two was now starting to learn from other people, starting to hear people's stories, understand how they think. Because I think when you have certain beliefs for so long, you have to then generate new beliefs for a longer period of time to overpower it. You know, obviously experience plays a role, but I think then retraining those beliefs, like it takes time. So, you know, inviting you on the podcast and listening to other YouTubers and stuff like that is kind of my approach now. Was there anything else I should be doing?
I like that. I think I like what you've mentioned so far, because that's also how I started as well. And then as you kind of get into it, you kind of start picking up on things that, you know what, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. But like, I wouldn't want to list off like 10 different things, where it's like if you have like two or three things that you think are actually working, stick with that. And then once you get good at that, like the next step, it will be revealed to you just from like mastering step one, two, and three. Once you get to step three, you will see step four.
I think
that's a great place to start, because that's where I started as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say is I think living in a city like Dubai is very expensive. You know, it's super, I think Sydney and London are quite similar in that they're very institutionalized, kind of. They've been cities that have been around a long time. There's not a lot of new innovation going on in terms of the actual city, right? Obviously there's people there doing amazing things, but in terms of the city growing itself, I find this city, Dubai, to be really inspiring. And I always say to people when they ask me about it, it's not can we do this, it's how do we do this. You know, anything you think's possible, they'll do it in this city. And I think not only from a money point of view, but just in terms of career and opportunities and doing things, this is a great place to be to break down the limitations of what you think is possible.
Oh my God. Like I agree with that 100%. Like I think I literally put that on my stories like the other day. I'm like, this place will really let you know that like you can literally do anything. This place is literally someone's imagination. Like I was watching some documentaries of like what Dubai looked like in 1997, and it was like there was barely anything
here. Like a dirt road.
Especially like the area of Dubai that we are in now, like this wasn't here. And like even like the man-made islands and stuff, and it's like who knew people could even do this. And so Dubai is definitely so inspiring for me as someone who's interested in wealth and money. Like this place inspires me like every day.
Yeah, it's definitely a great energy to be around.
For sure.
Well, Lamida, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm going to pop some links to your YouTube, your Instagram, all in the show notes so people can connect with you a little bit further. But thanks again. I really love learning from you and having this conversation today. And I'm keen to keep tuning into your content.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed being here.
Thank you.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.